again. 2-star iTunes review by My Club, August 9th, 2016. A long time ago, we used to be friends. You hate for one bad experience to destroy your whole perception of something. However, after listening to Infants for Hillary, I can never listen to them again. This is exactly how I felt after watching Jar Jar Binks. It may be unfair to judge George Lucas by
Did
Jar
a Republican
Jar,
kill John Hammer's dog or something? I just listened to the new Infants on Thrones podcast called For Hillary Mingled with Mormonism and Politics. John Hammer, who I think is generally fantastic, spewed out intense anti-Republican
rhetoric. I have been mourning the end of IoT podcast and also noticed their slow burnout, but this one was awful. I'm a huge John Hammer fan, but he was so obnoxious in this one.
I kind of thought the Infants were done before the episodes. Seems when I last listened a few months ago, they were ready for a town. It showed.
Okay, all right. Okay, enough. Jeez, fine, we'll never do another episode on politics again. We didn't really mean to hurt anybody's feelings, and we're sorry. We're sorry, and there's really no excuse for it.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humans. We are the core of the core.
Hello, this is the personal performance contract for returning Infants listeners. We encourage everyone to sign and date this as soon as possible, along with the signatures of your local Congress leader and nearest city councilman or woman. Part 1. To all those that use Orwellian hate speech, to them you must say,
John Hammer says no.
First Hamer, 33:12. Part 2. Recognize that there's no room in the celestial-terrestrial binary construct for a made-up telestial category. The Book of Ostland, Chapter 1, Verse 1. Part 3. Tom 3:16. Part 4. Never speak of pineapples or porcupines. Matt 7:12. Part 5. Acknowledge when one's heuristics are outdated. MC Heather 11:11. Part 6. Construct arbitrary scales by which to measure the credibility of people or things. Bob 3:5. Part 7. Never leave any infants out of the infant count. 2 Scott 44:12. Part 8. Make a South Park, Simpsons, or Louis C.K. reference whenever possible. Randy 5:31. Part 9. Always piggyback on other people's jokes in an irritating way. Jake 11:11. Remember, this is to protect you from the wiles of the world. If you violate this contract, may Tom have mercy on your souls. Now to our regularly scheduled SmackDown.
I can't think of the right word. This is a great start. But as we're smacking down this contract, should we also be prepared to have our own infants contract that we make our listeners enter into?
So they will always stay infants,
yeah,
listeners.
Right.
I like it.
Maybe, that sounds good to me.
So there should be something they're going to need to get a whole shitload of signatures, though. That's going to be the tricky part. All right.
It'll be like running for office or something in junior high, where you have to get like 10 signatures to be able to get your name on the ballot.
You ran for office in junior high, didn't you, Jake?
I was junior high student body president.
Yeah, you were.
I peaked in junior high. So I have a terrible life ahead of me.
That's what we call a peak too sooner.
Yeah. Pretty good.
All right.
All right. So let's go for it, Heather.
Morador, huh?
Uh-huh.
It's been chained. Okay, so it's the Morador stake. Goal planning and personal performance contract for returning missionaries.
Can we talk about this a little bit before we jump into it? So, like, where did this come across your radar, Jake? And like, what? Because I've heard a little bit about this. I don't really know that much. This is the first time I'm looking at it.
I think that first time I saw it was just like on Facebook. It was in the Mormon Hub or something like that, and somebody said, "Hey, check out this return missionary contract that my stake put out." I don't remember where. I think it was Utah, but whatever. Point is that it was a contract that they put out for, you know, recently returned missionaries to be able to make sure that they stayed in a church.
What was both of your experience when you got back from your missions?
Well, I don't know. Do you mean just vis-a-vis like staying in Mormonism? Was I ever tempted with inactivity?
Well,
my
coming back was such a letdown. It just felt like, what do you call it? Where it's like, you got your hopes all built up and then you're let down?
Like a silver medal.
Yeah, maybe. Or a bronze. That's one of them.
No, it's number four, coming in fourth.
I was going for anti-climax. Anti-Nephi Lehi climax.
Nice.
But because, you know, when you go on your mission, you're set apart, you go through the temple. You know, you get new underwear and new clothes, and it, you know, there's all of the stuff to make you different, and you are set apart from everybody else. Mm. And then when I got home, I was expecting some kind of parallel, you know, like bookend to my mission kind of thing. Right. And it was just, you know, my family met me at the airport. They did the whole silly, you know, they're all wearing Groucho Marx glasses and nose with mustache thing, and I just wanted to hide because I hated the whole thing anyway. I guess. I don't know. I don't understand where it came from, and that it just was perplexing to me, and I don't think I gave them the response they wanted. But but then
Was it foreshadowing of your first experience at Sunstone?
It could have been. It was just kind of like, all right, you guys, stop. No. But yeah, it was weird to me. And it was a lot of people too. Anyway, I was just really
popular.
No. My mom's the oldest of eight, so she recruited all of her,
right?
You know, all my uncles and aunts and cousins and things like that. And I'm the oldest.
And everyone
grandson.
Everyone who voted for me in middle school.
Well, that was Jake. I was student body president in high school.
High school.
Yeah.
Oh.
I peaked in high school, not in junior high like Jake. So actually, Jake's peaking now.
I was student body president of Harvard, so there.
Oh, wow. I don't believe it.
No, I don't even know if they have one, yeah. But I was feeling very one-upped.
So, my point
is... Had to get Harvard in there somewhere.
My state president, I went to his office. He said, so how was your mission? And I told him it's pretty good. He's like, all right, you can go. I'm like, what? Not even a prayer? You know, you're not going to bless me and unset me apart, you know, like return to the normal world of the heathens or something. You know, there was nothing. And so I just felt really weird. So I wonder if other people have had a similar kind of anticlimactic letdown that led to creating a document like this. So you feel like maybe it's a continuation of what you did before. It gives some kind of parallel structure or ritual or something. I don't know.
Well,
that's the first thought that came to me.
No, I think that it's a very good thought. And I think, I mean, I know that demographically returned missionaries are very high risk of going inactive.
Really?
Mormonism. Extremely high.
In the first year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Extremely. It's extraordinary. Mm-hmm.
And I think that it is that letdown. It's because the mission is this incredible feeling of camaraderie and common purpose. And, you know, cults are great if you're in them, you know.
Really?
I mean, they're great if in certain situations, you know, they really create a little community for you and a sense of purpose. And so to come home and just be like, well, you're done now, go out, wander into the field. You know, at the end of The Lord of the Rings, when they come back to the Shire.
How do you pick up the threads of an old life? How do you go on when in your heart you begin to understand there is no going back?
This is the third ending, right?
Right, yeah.
The third of seven.
Done. Yes, Mr. Frodo. It's over now.
Now come the days of the king.
May they be blessed.
13 months. months to the day since Gandalf sent us on our long journey, we found ourselves looking upon a familiar sight. We were home.
Here at last, on the shores of the sea, comes the end of our fellowship.
No, I think it's like the final ending, and like
come back from the harbor, and he like walks in, and he's got like little hobbit kids that just creep you out because it suggests hobbit sex, and nobody wants to be thinking that.
Where do their feet? I bet foot fetish is that. That's probably a big thing in the hobbit community.
Could be.
Maybe they just love people.
I think hobbit sex is Hobbit sex is hairy and short, right?
Yeah.
I think we got to switch to the Hurt Locker. It's like after the Hurt Locker, you come home and you're like, there's only one thing that really does it for me anymore. Can't wait to get back out there. But there's no back out there.
Right. I guess it's a very kind of militarized mindset that you have as a missionary, right? And you have a very specific, you have, you know, your group, your platoon of I know that there's going to be some veterans in the audience are going to be like, you idiots, nothing like that. You're not getting shot at, stupid dummy. But it's, I can see it being a very big, and that was it was a letdown for me. I just filled it full of sexual voyeurism. Just
kidding. We can't, all right, this is going to be a competition to draw a laugh from Glenn tonight. I know we can do it, Jake. We try hard enough. I remember like going into my mission, having graduated from college and feeling like, I can't believe people are telling me what to do every single moment of every day. I've been living as an adult on my own for over 4 years. I don't need someone to hand me a schedule and tell me what to read at what time. This is so annoying. And everybody like trying to be so bubbly and excited to be there. And me feeling like, I can't believe I'm back at summer camp in, you know, seventh grade. And then coming off my mission, having the polar opposite experience where I was like, I just love being on a mission and knowing exactly what I'm supposed to do every day. And so I seriously roped my little sister, who's 6 years younger than me, into being my companion. And we slept in the same room. We read the scriptures together. We prayed together. I just basically turned her into my companion, which she was totally up for because, you know, she's younger than me. She'll do whatever. And just tried to keep on being a missionary. And I definitely missed, and I remember saying this in my journal and to various people, I miss that sense of purpose that you have every day in your mission. And it's more than that, the sense of purpose, I think, for why people do go inactive so quickly after missions. I think, especially since they changed the age of missionaries, that and ended up having to send so many missionaries stateside into programs that were already saturated, flooded with missionaries. There's no work to do, very few baptisms, very little success. And missionaries were exposed for the first time out in the mission field to things that they never knew about the church. Because you're a missionary at that time, so many people just have to put all of this stuff on the shelf because when you're trying to convince people to join the church, you can't really think it through. You just have to give your side of the story. But then afterwards, that's when people have the liberty to say, all right, well, let's take down and look at some of the things on the shelf here, and it ain't pretty.
So Glenn, was the loss of structure what was a letdown for you? Or was it the lack of like kind of a ceremony, like now you are a real person again? Or
yeah.
What was it?
Well, it was the ceremony, and I remember feeling scared a little bit, you know, like that I didn't have the extra special protection that missionaries have, and that now I was coming back into a world that was 2 years more wicked than I had left it.
And
my best friends in high school weren't members of the church. You know, they're good guys, but they weren't Mormon. And I remember going and hanging out with them, and they had just, you know, they were in their second year at University of Arizona, and they were telling me, you know, like they never drank in high school, but now they were drinking. And I just thought, oh man. See, this is why the Lord sends, you know,
studs like me on a mission to keep us safe. And, you know, instead of like, you know, I can't think of words tonight. Anyway, and they were telling me about how aggressive, like sexually aggressive women are now. And that, like,
in those 2 years,
yeah, in those 2 years, it's just like, it's a completely different world. But I believed it. I'm like, oh yeah, well, because we're getting close to the end of the world anyway, and we know things are going to speed up.
I love how you thought that it was because society had changed, and not just because you were older.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. Because they're college girls now, not high school girls. I don't know,
but
it just scared the crap out of me, and I thought, how am I going to keep myself worthy? Because my mission had been, you know, like I had experiences before my mission where I stopped, you know, things getting hot and heavy or whatever, and I stopped because I thought I can't be unworthy for my mission. I've got it. You know, the mission was always looming out there as this is what you were put on Earth to do. And then it goes away. And so what is it? Oh, it's getting married, having kids, you know, but that's not quite as structured as the missionary experience. So I just felt initially scared, and it took a couple of weeks to feel like I got back to normal again. And then I loved it and started having nightmares about being called back on my mission. And that's a right. whole different. that was the worst. Like, no, I don't want to go back. No, I don't want to go back.
I still have those occasionally.
Yeah.
Kent had one like a week ago or something, dreamt he was back on his mission. It was a nightmare. Right. Get me out of here.
They're like, where have you been, Elder? You're supposed to be here. We're adding another 2 years. No!
The never-ending mission.
But the thing is, at the time, I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds now, or, you know, that I have nightmares about it now, at the time, yeah, it's a scary thing to go back into the real world, you know, because you've passed through that veil of the mission, this experience that was kind of, I never looked past my mission before I went on it. I never thought like beyond that. Right. That was the experience.
Yeah.
And then when you're on the other side, like, what else is there? Like, what happens now? You know?
So I didn't know, you know, you guys were saying that it's very common that returned missionaries go inactive within the first year. Where are you getting that? Are there studies, statistics? How common is common?
So I'm remembering something from an article about it where it was really high, like among men, like 50%. But I'm afraid that I might be inventing that statistic.
I think it depends on where you are in the world. I know that the Bob statistics cred scale.
We need to put that into the Bob statistic generator and find out. It's probably closer to 58%. I don't know.
No, I think most of the idea, me getting this idea, I think was mostly from like mission presidents and people on my mission saying this, that it was very common. And I observed just anecdotally in Peru, it was very common that after the mission, a lot of people would go inactive. But I think that it's true. I feel like I'm going with the 50%. I'm gonna join that train. Okay. So do you want to plunge? Let's jump into this then.
Plunge.
Okay. So goal planning and performance contract for returning missionaries, and then there's your name, the date, the mission, and the ward. Which I think it's interesting that you have to list your mission on there.
Yeah, because it shouldn't matter.
Or maybe it should. I don't know. Does it matter?
Well, but it's just another way of. Don't ever let it end, you know. Like this was a joke when I created that satirical character Stephen Erastus Knudsen for my BYU satire class. Uh-huh. I created him as a guy that had never really come back from his mission, so uh-huh. He was still following the schedule. You know, he still carried around his white handbook. He was still writing his weekly letters to the president, even though the president was writing back saying, please stop, you don't have to do this anymore. You know, so I I see this as you don't really want to let go of that identity that made you so special, and that maybe that's something that would, you know, remember who you are and what you stand for, kind of thing, that you were a missionary in the blank mission. Don't ever disrespect that. We're going to put that right up on the top of your goal planning and personal performance contract for returning missionaries.
Right. So it's not an abstraction at all, because this is the keeping it very much grounded in your actual experience.
This also reminds me of I had some really good friends. This was before, I think, no, this was probably after our missions. It must have been after our missions. And we were at BYU, and I walked into their bedroom, and I saw that this guy had written out a contract for himself that was very much like this, but it was just, you know, I, Greg Doyle, having been, you know, of sound mind, do hereby do this. And he was trying to commit himself to reading a chapter in the scriptures every day. And, you know, so he had this contract. He wrote it out for him to sign it, for it to be like a witness to sign it. And then he also made a calendar where he could check off the days that he had done it. And then he also made a scripture snake out of construction paper links, where each link was a chapter. And so he had that on the top of his bedroom wall, like all around his bedroom. And so I looked at this sitting on his desk, and he had done it maybe a week before and signed it. And there had been like day one, yep, day two, yep, day three, day four, blank. And then with all this, you know, like, and I just cracked up at that. I'm like, that's totally what I would have done. You know, like, put all this work into, here's how I'm going to track it, and here's how I'm going to display it, and here's how I'm going to do this. And then it lasts for a couple of days. And
I had this.
It's like a New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
You make it to January 6th.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a similar ambitions, though, of like, I'm going to have goals. I'm going to have, like, I when I was in my last exchange on the mission, I was like, I'm going to have, like, goals for, like, number of contacts about the gospel that I'm going to, you know, like, lessons given and things like that. I'm going to go out with the missionaries. I'm going to really.
I'm going to measure things that nobody's ever even thought of before, and magnify my calling and really support the missionaries. I'll be that member in the ward that I wanted all the other ward members to be when I was a missionary. I'll be
exactly,
that guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because I did want to do that. I wanted to keep that kind of fire going. But yeah. Look at me now.
Yeah.
I'm a failure. It's because I didn't sign this contract.
Yeah.
I don't know about these contracts. I mean, even when you were supposed to write this letter to the president of the church accepting your missionary call and say, I'm going to do all of these things perfectly for all of the time that I'm on there, and it had all of the checkpoints, I looked at it and thought, you know, realistically, I don't think I'm going to be able to do all of this, and I don't want to lie, which is worse. So I never sent that in.
So I'm gonna put on my speculating blue shirt for a minute and say, I am very confident that this was written by a former AP, because the APs were always they're all about, okay, now's my time. How can I put my stamp on this, you know, 3 months or 4 months or however long it is that I'm going to be AP in this mission, and creating these new mission programs that, you know, as a non-AP, I was always like, okay, we got a new guy in. What's our new mission program? And there was always something like return to serve with honor, and return to serve even better with honor, and return to serve even better with honor again. And, you know, like all
it's all about legacy, right? Trying to leave some sort of legacy. Oh, Elder like Anderson.
We figured out what's going to turn everybody around. Like in my mission, it was Seiyaku Dendo, which is covenant. Seiyaku is a covenant. So you make a covenant with God that, like, if you wake up every morning at 5 a.m. and then, you know, you say, I'm going to do this, Lord. And in return, you give me 40 Book of Mormons that I give out in the week. Okay, deal? Deal. And this is you've covenant with God. And now you've bound him, because I, the Lord, am bound when you do what I say. You know, so this became like a mission program that had all these kinds of, you know, I'm going to set these goals, I'm going to make these covenants, I'm going to obey it to the letter, I'm going to sign it, you know, God signing it. Anyway, so yeah, I'm pretty sure this was made by an AP.
Right. And the first shot out of the box is obedience. Mm-hmm. That's the first part one. So I'll just keep going. Part one, obedience. To them that honor me, I will honor. 1 Samuel 2:30. Glenn, you want to go in with the commitments?
Uh-huh. Because the commitments, what's the most important two words in a commitment pattern?
I will.
Yeah, or will you? When you're asking will you, so the inverse of that, I will. My commitment, I will enroll and attend Institute weekly steak classes or Wednesday night at 7 p.m. at Redacted or Redacted, because this wasn't really in the Morador somewhere. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next, attend all Sunday meetings weekly! ! Bolded.
So Glenn, wait a second. So did you do those things? Did you come home and immediately? Because if you were looking for, you know, well, what next and structure and all the rest of it, did you immediately enroll in and attend an institute and go to all your Sunday meetings?
Hell no.
No?
No. Well, so, and I, you know, my
so Wednesday was on the fourth day.
When I got back from my mission, I was only home for a couple of weeks, and then I went to Los Angeles and was working as a tour guide for a Japanese tour company, and that was a very quick spiral back to the natural world there was a lot of stuff going on with those guys.
So you didn't go to Institute in Los Angeles?
No. And I,
how about you, Jake?
And I didn't go to all my Sunday meetings either.
Really?
No.
See, that I'm surprised by.
That is surprising.
I hated going to church.
Oh, okay. So you wanted the structure, but you hated the structure. That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you, Jake?
So I enrolled in BYU like a month after I got back, or 2 months after I got back. So BYU, you have to take religion classes and stuff. I wasn't going to an institute outside of that, but I feel like if you're at BYU, it kind of counts, because I went to, well, I didn't even go to devotional most of the time though, so I don't know if that counts. So on BYU campus, on like Tuesdays at like 11 or something, they shut down campus essentially. Like there are no classes, there are no, most of the amenities shut down, like in the Wilkinson Center and stuff. And everybody's supposed to go to these devotionals, and they'll bring in some, you know, schmuckety schmuck from the 70 or whatever. And they give some sort of address. But I didn't even go to those. I would just kind of take it as like a free hour. So, yeah, no good for me. I struck out there on that one. Sunday meetings, yes, I did. What about you? Did you go to Institute?
I went to Institute. I'm not sure that I went absolutely every week. And then I was called as an Institute teacher because the Institute choir was considered a class, and I was the director. So then I went every week. And I definitely attended all my Sunday meetings until I started dating someone where we would make out during the second hour. But
where?
I lived really close to the church. We go back. I'm not all right. I'm just ruining my reputation. yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Wait. You're not gonna say it.
So we go back to my house for the second hour, and then we go, you know, back for the third hour and the like meet and greet afterwards. So
yeah, you should have made out before taking the sacrament, so that then you could just like wash it all away.
Exactly, like a reset.
Yeah,
like an Etch-a-Sketch. You just shake that Etch-a-Sketch clean slate.
Because then everything that you do after the sacrament, you got to wait a whole week to clean that out.
Yeah, well,
making out is not sinful. I don't think I had to repent for, you know, a little make out here and there.
Was there lust in your heart?
I should hope so. Yeah. Otherwise, how boring would that be? Yeah.
he may not have been doing it right. Out.
Just perfunctory. All right, fine. I guess it's Sunday again. No, I mean, I pretty much did Institute and Sunday meetings, and I think that would help a lot just in keeping people active, not just for keeping them feeling part of the community, but also just taking up all their time. Like the more the church takes up of your time, the more you just give up on trying to do other things. And then your church friends become all your friends, and then you're deep in.
Yeah. See, right? I wish that I would have gone to church now, but that's, you know, because I've got 20/20 retro vision, right? So the reason I was in Los Angeles in the first place was because I was dating my first wife, who I met while I was a missionary through letters, and then we met in person after my mission, and she lived in that area, so I went there to work so I could date with her. So on the weekends, I would go to church with her and her family. But like, I wish I would have stayed in LA and got to know other people my age, you know, but I didn't anyway, because I was already gone. So it wasn't,
so you think
it wasn't
you would have stayed?
Stayed what? Active?
Stayed active. Would you still be in the church today had you attended Institute Weekly?
No. Yes, and that's why I wish that I would have. I
the lamentations of the sinner's soul.
No, but I like Institute, I don't think I ever took an Institute course. You know, I was at BYU, and so I was taking Institute there, but it felt differently. It wasn't like if I'm at ASU and I'm going to release time seminary like I did as a high school student. That would feel weird. And when I came to Indiana University, they had Institute classes here. I didn't go there. Did you ever do that, Jake, in Bloomington?
Well, they have great parking.
They do. That's the thing. People
right across.
Yeah.
So, you have to take a certain number.
You have to once a month to be able to go once a month to be eligible for the parking pass.
So that's what I would do. I would go once a month to be eligible for the parking pass, because that's how it hooked you.
Yeah, right. That's why the Lord inspired them to put the Institute building that close to campus.
Exactly, and with a nice, beautiful, pristine parking lot.
Yeah.
That's how I approached it.
All right.
Heather, you want to carry on?
Sure. So accept a calling to serve in addition to home teaching or visiting teaching. I was thinking as you were saying, like when they don't give you a laying on of hands blessing to take away your missionary status. And I don't remember that, although that would feel odd because the setting apart is so, is such a powerful ordinance and physical and everything. But I guess for all callings, that's what they do. And then they just like release you with a vote, right? So I guess maybe that would be the closure if you got the calling and were set apart to something new. Now I'm no longer a missionary. Now I'm, at least I have a new identity.
Well, I think that they're actually, if you look at this next bullet point, I think that they are trying to address that issue of closure.
Oh, right. Report my mission to the High Council on blank date and speak in sacrament meeting on such and such date.
Right. I figure those are kind of the thing, the more formal closure, like I am done. Here's my report.
I'm surprised it doesn't say bear your testimony in your native language when you speak in sacrament meeting on a certain date.
Or in sign language, in sign language of the country that you went to.
Is that what you did?
Russian sign language?
I partially did. So I served in Ukraine, not near Chernobyl, but there were so many people in that part of Ukraine that there was a deaf ward. And there were deaf people in my last branch, and they did teach me Russian sign language a little bit, enough to bear a rudimentary testimony. Anyway, so fun fact about Ukraine.
Is it just like English sign language, but with no articles?
Yeah, the accent is totally different. Yeah, it's different things. But I was curious after my mission. So when am I no longer a missionary? And nobody ever gave me the memo of, sorry, so you're a missionary until this or that happens. And I remember coming back on our flight, we had a day in Vienna, a bunch of sister missionaries who were coming home together. And I was like, cool, we're no longer missionaries. Let's go, I don't know what. Not sin or anything, but let's stay out as late as we want. And I don't know what else. And people are like, oh no, you're still a missionary now. Like, okay, so tell me at what point in time does the mantle come off? Because I will be obedient, but this seems kind of absurd that we're not proselyting. We're told not to proselyte in Vienna. And what are we supposed to do? It was this weird limbo.
Yeah, that is weird that now that I think about it, there really isn't a good – like nobody really tells you this is the moment that you're not a missionary anymore. Like they say you're released, but they don't – that you'll be released from being a missionary. But it's not really clear. Like it can be just somebody just being like, okay, you're done. Thank you. Like until that moment that they say that? Because when you're set apart, like I thought like something really – was happening like on a kind of mystical level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like something was happening. I was being enshrouded in angels or whatever.
And the magical hat was telling you to which house you belong.
Right. Exactly. Yes. The sorting hat, right? Something was happening, but it doesn't really unhappen.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That was my biggest thing because me being set apart was the single most spiritual experience I ever had in my life. You know, like,
ooh,
like shaking, tears, just feeling, you know, like, yeah, Jesus has personally prepared people, you know, for me to bring into the gospel. And this is awesome. This is what it's all about. It's finally happened. You know, I just was so feeling it.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing to go back and read my journal now from like right after. It says something like, my fragile frame can hardly contain all of the joy our Father in heaven has to bestow upon me. You know, it's just like,
mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And so to not have anything even touching that says, okay, you can go and make out now. You know, you can, you know, like
go forth and make out.
Go right? forth and make out, you know, or yeah, you can resume your pre-mission life. It was a vacuum.
But what they need to do, hope, and now all of the men in the little group in Salt Lake City who are listening to Infants on Thrones,
right.
because they're worried about us, and also to get ideas. Uh-huh. Here's an idea for you,
yeah.
Folks. You should have like a baby blessing, like a return missionary blessing in front of the whole congregation where you get to invite all of whoever you want to come up and give you a blessing, like an after release missionary blessing that says, you have returned with honor and the Lord is well pleased with you and you will go on and finish your education and you will stay active in the church and you will, et cetera.
Right.
Wouldn't that be incredibly powerful?
Think about it. Is a really, really good idea.
Well, actually, instead of something like that, it should be in the temple. You know, like you go through a temple session and, you know, they have the missionary be like one of the people that leads their family through the, you know, or something like that where the, you know, but yeah, mm-hmm. some kind of a ritual, that, you know, closes it up. It says, move on to your next phase. But anyway,
we still haven't gotten
through all the bullet points on here.
So when they announced that, you heard it here first on right. Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones. I'll carry on. Continue to dress modestly and act like a missionary.
Yeah.
Act like a missionary?
I guess they don't mean that, like, totally, though.
They do.
Well,
There's no asterisk. So that you still are forbidden from, you know, physical contact with the opposite sex?
Right.
To what extent?
I didn't kiss my first wife until after we were married.
You are kidding me. No.
No, because they weren't married yet.
She wasn't my wife yet.
You're not tuned in to the dad jokes. I'm on the dad joke frequency.
You nailed me, but not in that way. Good job. Yeah. Shoot.
I can't believe that you fell for that joke. That's so cool.
I'm right into it.
Way to go, Glenn.
Yeah.
Yeah, but act like a missionary. Which missionary from my mission? The ones that were staying home and playing chess all day? Which ones, you know?
Well, that's because acting like a missionary is a model. And those missionaries weren't acting like missionaries.
They were missionaries.
They were missionaries, but they weren't
missionaries who weren't acting like missionaries. These are not missionaries who are acting like missionaries. So it just means being what Jake wanted to be. And supporting the missionaries, continuing to do missionary work, you know, being respectful, keeping your hair short. You know, it's paired up with dressing modestly
And right.
It's like dress modestly and act modestly, but instead of act modestly, it says act like a missionary.
And act douchey like you're more important than everybody else.
Right.
And your calling's way cooler.
What can I sign?
I'm in. Yeah. Next one. Keep my temple recommend current. Honor my mission by living my life with integrity. Attend the temple regularly.
That's my favorite, regularly, because it can mean everything. Mm-hmm. I regularly go to the temple every 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Like clockwork.
Like clockwork.
Attend, it's every time Haley's Comet comes around, I come to the temple.
It's my
That's as regular as it can be. Attend the weekly RMTC classes at YSA Stake Center for 4 weeks. I don't know what RMTC class.
Returned is. Missionary Training Center. Seriously.
That might actually be it. That's probably it.
This is like, there's a 4 week indoctrination, like introduction into the regular world. How to be a returned missionary? Whoa, we got to Google this one.
So I'm reading RMTC. Okay.
Maybe it's only their stake, right? So I'm getting Racing Medication and Testing Consortium. Not helpful.
I don't think that's it. Okay, so the Logan, Utah Institute of Religion has an RMTC dinner Friday, this Friday, tomorrow, at 6 p.m.
So all of our listeners in Logan should go.
And it just said, but it says Friday there will be an RMTC RMTC dinner for all RMs returned from January 1st to August 19th who have not gone to one.
This is the Logan Institute of Religion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That's what I'm seeing. But I.
Oh, there's a letter to a struggling RM. That would be fun to read.
Hmm.
Oh, by the way, did I tell you that I had my bishop, the whole bishopric, come over to the house the other night? I invited them.
No, you told me they were going to.
Yeah.
All right, so how did that go down?
It was nice. It was cordial, you know. And I said, want to be friendly and let you know who we are. And I didn't go into any details or stories or anything. I just said, we've been inactive for a long time and we don't have any intention of coming back. The bishop asked, well, what about home teachers? And I said, yeah, you know, it's just uncomfortable because they want to share things and I don't want to be rude, but I'm also not really interested in what they have to share. And then they say, can I leave you with a prayer? And I'd actually rather not, but I'm not going to say no. It just makes me feel weird in my house. And he's like, well, what if there was somebody else who knew the situation? They weren't pushing religion. I'm like, maybe, you know, I don't mind being friendly. And so, you know, I said, if there was just like the social aspect of the church where people are banding together to help each other and help other people, but you weren't having to reiterate over and over again, I know that this is true. I know that that is true. It's all about the truth, claims, and belief. You know, belief is such a high, you know, that's the common denominator for everybody there.
Mm.
And if it wasn't, I'd be okay with it. But I can't go to church and be silent. Like, that's just not in my nature. And so it's torture for me. And then he asked me what I think about God, and I called myself an atheist. I've never called myself an atheist before, but I figured that's probably just the easiest way to explain it to him. Yeah.
And did their hair catch fire? Did their mouths drop open?
They were really nice guys, you know. So no, they didn't. They asked Krista, you know, what about you? Do you feel similar? Like, I don't think they could really. No, he did repeat the word atheist once or twice, Yeah, they were very cool, very nice. They thanked me for inviting them over and just letting them know, from the start what's going on with us and not having it be something that just comes up in ward meetings. Like, what can we do to help the Auslands? Like, we're good.
So did you get the feeling that they have no idea that you are a super important part of the Exmo community, Glenn Auslan of Infants on Thrones?
No, the dozens and dozens of people that we reach have not permeated into their circle. No, they asked at one point, like, if there were hobbies, you know, but they were asking like Krista and I, like things that we do that we share. I don't think they were playing coy and trying to dig for like, we know that you do a podcast. We're going to see if you're going to tell us. I don't think it was that. There wasn't any indication to me that they had any, and like the questions that they were asking me, like, oh, you know, so you don't believe in God? You like, what do you believe in? You know, it just didn't, I don't think so.
You know, it,
so I don't there know. Must not be a file that goes from bishop to bishop that has that stuff on it, or that has it in any way that it's clear what it is, if it is.
Unless you're gay.
Unless right? I'm gay, right.
Right, if you were gay, just a little bit, that would be, you know, you could maintain some notoriety, but now you're just anonymous. See, my issue with, like, home teaching and stuff is, like, do you want to have an awkward conversation with somebody that's trying to be your friend with whom you have nothing in common?
Right.
Once a month?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Well, and I did tell him, I'm like, if it was somebody who's interested in Mormon history and they like exploring things from a more secular perspective, that would be cool because I like doing that. And, you know, I wouldn't mind making friends with people in the ward. That's how I became friends with you, Jake. You know?
That's true. That's true. So, I shouldn't write it off.
Right. So it's not something that, you know, I feel like I'm going to actively be going out and, like, you know, I was actively attending when you moved into the Bloomington ward and we met each other. But, you know, if things like that happen in the neighborhood and I get to know people, I'd be fine. Anyway.
This sounds like the beginning of a beautiful story in which Glenn gets loved back into the church.
I know. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be amazing.
That would be awesome.
Here's the thing. You would get a book deal from Deseret News. 100% certainty. I am 100% sure that if you went back to the Mormon church with gusto, they would give you a book deal.
Yeah. Should we test that?
I mean, are you really willing to do that? No. You want to go undercover?
No.
Undercover?
No.
That sounds like that guy who got, that comedian who got baptized. No, a different comedian.
Oh. Yeah.
No, the comedian who got baptized for a bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, in England. The one that Matt sent us the link to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could do it for a bit. Don't do it.
I won't.
Don't play.
I won't. I can't. No.
All right, Glenn, do you want to read the Nurturing Blessings of the Spirit?
I really do. have we finished? Oh, yeah, we did. Okay, so that was all part one, obedience.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, like when you're growing up in scouts and there's like things that you have to do for your merit badges and stuff, it'll be kind of in this format, but instead of bullet points, it's like little boxes, and it'll say you have to do 3 of the 5 things in the list below, and you can pick which 3 you want. This is like 10 things. You've just got to do all of them. You can't even check that you're going to do it. You're just saying, yeah, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, all those things I'm going to do.
Right. And the rest of it is kind of open-ended. There are places you can write in your own thing. But with the obedience portion, you just
follow.
Here's a list of things. You do all these.
You just do it. And there's nothing in there about word of wisdom. There, like, is there anything in there about like rated R movies or the types of things that?
Well, I think that act like a missionary and honor my mission by living my life with integrity are meant to kind of umbrella.
Yeah, all that stuff. Keeping your temple recommend current,
right?
You know, so there you've got to be worthy to go into the temple, all that stuff.
Right, but I'm actually surprised that there's not anything in here like about pornography. Like I figured that the pornography would have at least one, like, I will not engage in pornographic blah blah blah, right? I won't be on a porno or watch one.
Do you think that hobbits jack off with their feet and that's why they're so hairy? And they're slightly blind. Okay.
That might be it.
All right. So part 2, nurturing the blessings of the Spirit, 1 Nephi 10:19. And you're just going to have to go and read it if you want to know what that actually says. But just trust them. It's about nurturing blessings of the Spirit. The following things, or the following are things I will do to keep the influence of the spirit in my life. And then there's five blank spaces. What would you have filled in for that, Jake?
That's a good question. And that was exactly the question in the exact wording I was about to ask you, but you jumped in. So, yeah, what are the five things I would have put in there?
Not star in a porno.
Not star in a porno. Not hobbitize my life.
Right.
Excellent.
Right. I think that one goal that I had that I really wanted to live up to, like I wanted to believe that I could be this person, was to continue to be a missionary.
Right.
And like at least have one convert or something, you know, like have a guy that I talk to
per month.
Right. Yeah. Something like that. Or it's like one a year. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to go crazy here. I'll do something achievable. One a year.
Yeah. Right.
That I can bring.
You yeah. Know. You go ahead and limit yourself that way, Jake.
Little faith. I am a little faith. I didn't have faith enough to shake in my, I didn't have like an amazing setting apart experience. So obviously like, I was like, God doesn't really have that much in store for me.
Yeah. I didn't want to point that out, but.
Right. No.
I'm glad you did.
That's okay.
I don't really remember being set apart. That's how a little impression it made on me. I don't really remember who did it. Does your bishop do it? Who sets you apart?
It's got to be different for sisters.
For ladies. Yeah.
It's got to be like, missionaries.
Here's a thing that you're doing. You're not really a missionary, but you kind of. In the same general air, you know.
I think what they do is they give you a makeover and they give your nails and there's a big reveal and suddenly you're a missionary.
It's a wake me up before you go-go montage.
It's a make under where they make you less attractive and asexual.
Here, your pantyhose.
Yeah.
For the clunky flats.
In Ukraine, we have the usual dress code where the guys wear ties and the girls wear long dresses, and this is to make you look like you're business people. Unfortunately, in that country, the only women who wear long skirts like that are gypsies and pickpockets, and the only guys who dress like that are either in high-level government or a high-level mafia. Both of which are like the least trustworthy organizations in the country. And here we are trying to look like you can trust us because we're so professional.
Yeah.
So total backfire. I don't know how that had to do with anything about nurturing the blessings of the spirit.
Well, you were talking about being set apart and that,
oh, right. Yes.
That it was a different experience for you. And I think probably because if I remember right, when I was set apart, that was also when I was given the Melchizedek priesthood, and I went from the preparatory Aaronic priesthood to the real one, Melchizedek priesthood.
And I was given the Deboric motherhood at that point to be able to serve as a sister missionary.
Yeah, I think
your uterus was infused with power.
I think you were given
that's right.
Given the made up name sister, whereas we were given elders, which is an actual legit office from the New Testament, yo. And, you know, this like little sister thing is just something that they give for those girls that can't get married. They want to go on missions.
Which makes so much sense because you're an elder in your community at age 18.
Yes.
Right.
So they ought to have made the sisters like crones.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be great.
Crones. That would be pretty great.
Yes.
We're just full of ideas there in church headquarters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get a lot of material out of this.
I think the things that I would have filled in for nurturing the blessings that I would do to keep the influence of the spirit in my life, I think prayer would have been the first thing, like, you know, morning and night prayer. Cause that was something that really kept me feeling connected, you know, to God mm-hmm. and all that. And when I stopped doing that, I could feel it. Like, I could feel the difference, and it was weird. I probably would have had something like you suggested, Jake, about missionary work, that I would share the gospel with my friends mm-hmm. and always be an example.
Be an example.
For other people. You know, I'm sure I would have had things on there like tithing and just being active as a member. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. What about reading your scriptures every day? Because that was definitely a covenant that I just made early on, and always, it would have for sure probably been number one on here.
Yeah, I think it probably would have been number six for me on this list of five.
Yeah, yeah. I just noticed that. 1, 2, 3, 4, right. 6.
Yeah, just like, yeah, which means, oh, dang, that one didn't make the list. I would have intentionally not, like, I would have intentionally avoided putting that on there because I wouldn't want to set myself up for failure. And I know mm-hmm. there's no way I'd be reading scriptures every day. It's just, no, I can't do that. But like other church books, yeah, like maybe read something that was written by President Benson or, you know, mm-hmm. Hinckley or, you know, those kinds of books would count.
So this is the thing I've been wanting to ask for a while. Reading your scriptures, praying, that's kind of seen as like Sunday school answers, quote unquote. But I think that they're actually, I mean, that's pretty effective, right? So what is going on there? Why is it so effective to be doing that stuff every day, even if it kind of, I mean, because most of the time when I would read scriptures, I would just kind of glaze over, because that's, you know, it's King James English. Like, I'm not like fucking riveted by that. You know, it's old archaic language. It's really hard to kind of keep engaged in it. But even at the same time, like there was some sort of connection that it kept reinforcing. Absolutely.
For me, you know, I don't know how many times I read the Book of Mormon or the other canonized scriptures, but it was a lot. And every time, it was connected to the times that I'd read it before and the first time, and going back to, you know, remembering when I felt this way or that way about it. So it keeps you in it.
Well, and I think there's a couple reasons, or many reasons, and a few of them, it becomes white noise and it blocks out anything else, you know? So when mm-hmm. when I started replacing, you know, scripture reading and prayer with HBO programming, you know, it changed the way that I saw the world, you know, and it changed my value system. Because I started things that before I had been told to stay away from and not value, I started seeing, wow, there's some real value in this and I enjoy it, you know, so that started holding my interest more than these other things. So I think there's that kind of white noise effect that
busy work.
Like you just want to keep reinforcing your these messages over and over again. Mm-hmm. But I do think, for my experience, at least both with prayer and scripture study, because I really believed that God could communicate with me and angels could communicate with me, and I could have that spiritual inspiration and interaction. Those were the vehicles to make that happen, you know? So saying a prayer where I'm, you know, pleading for things that are important to me in my life, or I'm making kind of covenants and I'm going, yeah, I realize I do this and I shouldn't do this. I need to be better at that. You know, it's very, very self-reflective, and I would feel the spirit, you know, like what you're taught as sure. the spirit. So it gave me that sense of connection to really myself, but what I thought was God. But so I was more grounded in, you know, this form of meditation. And then with scriptures, because you're taught to read them with a question in your mind, or, you know, like things that are going on in your life, and you'll find answers in the scripture. And, you know, I'm sure some people, you know, are much better at doing that than others. For me, I was able to manufacture relevancy from non-relevancy.
Oh, sure.
Very easily. You know,
yeah.
I go like, oh yeah, so this, the reason, you know, like I don't know that I ever actually did the cold open, you know, where you just like, I've got this problem. I'm just going to pick up the scriptures and open a page and point to a verse and boom, there's the answer. I may have done that. Yeah, right. I may have done that once.
Magic eight ball.
But there was always something like that. And I would experience that in the temple too. Like I've seen this thing a million times, but one line really sticks out the others. And I'm like, oh, that's it. So it feels like that's the way that God communicates with me. So I've got to keep putting up with all the boring stuff. Because every once in a while it'll come through, and that totally makes it worth it.
It's almost like, you know, when you think about a word too long, and then the word starts sounding really weird to you,
like drawer.
Both. Yeah,
both.
Drawer.
Both.
Both.
What does that even mean? Both.
Both.
You know? Or whatever it is. Whoa. Drawer.
Drawer.
Why is
drawer?
Maybe it's like that where you just kind of eventually, if you just spend enough time with something, it's going to seem – you're going to see it from a different perspective. And it's like, oh, it's amazing. How could anything ever be different? How could I ever think about a thing differently after thinking about it for so long?
Yeah. Like one of our commenters mentioned cognitive ease, which is a really important concept, and that the more you hear something or the more you say something, the more true it starts to sound. So if any of us were to start just watching Fox News 24/7, at some point it would start to seem plausible, you know, it would start to really feel like, hey, you know, they got a point there, you know.
You know, maybe this guy is a Muslim, you know? I mean, there's no, like, real proof, but it just kind of feels like
that. Birth certificate, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway. So cognitive ease. You keep reading it. The more and more you read it, the more true it's going to sound.
That almost sounded political, you guys. You should really be careful.
Jake, you be careful you could cut that.
Right. Once burned, twice shy.
Yes. So I can't believe you didn't use the scriptures as a magic eight ball, because I did that all the time. And here's how to do it best. So you come up with a question and in the form of yes or no, and you want the answer to be yes. And then you flip it open and keep reading till you hit yes or no, because it's almost always going to be yay.
Oh,
yay,
so
verily I say. Mm-hmm.
So you would just be tuning in the keywords yes or no.
Yeah.
That's how you would do it. So walk me through a decision that you made that way.
No, I don't know that I really did or not. But,
but John Hamer did. Like when John was young and he's like, am I gay?
And yay.
Yay, you verily are. Thou art.
You know,
thou hast said it. You know, and.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
There was when I was trying to decide where to go to college, whether to go to the University of Utah or that other school that shall not be named, I did open the scriptures and keep reading until I came across the Eastern States or the Eastern country or Eastern States, I think it was, in the DNC. I'll just read until something, you know, like Glenn says, till I can pull some kind of meaning out of it. So there you have it.
Wow. The human brain is quite a thing.
Okay.
All right. Where?
Part three.
Okay, so that was part one, obedience. Part two, nurturing the blessings of the Spirit. Part three.
Seeking personal purity. Is it my turn to read?
Yes.
Okay. Seeking personal purity, Moroni 7:48. I will associate with and date only people who share a similar commitment to live the principles of the gospel. This is why I believe that commitment is so important.
Wow, that took a very different turn. I did not think that seeking personal purity, I thought it was going to be about
pornography.
Pornography. Yeah, right.
Hobbits.
Porn, hobbits, hairy feet. I did not see it going down, at least explicitly down the road of, I will only associate with and date people that share a similar commitment to live the principles of the gospel.
Oh my gosh. So I will have no friends other than those who are committed to living the principles of the gospel. I will not have friends of other faiths. That's it.
Well, I mean, maybe. Okay. So this sounds to me like more like code language of word of wisdom, law of chastity, specifically. So like you can be friends. I don't know if this really covers like, if you have Christian friends that don't drink or have sex, but they don't believe in the Book of Mormon, that's probably okay. But if you have friends that do any of those other things, then that's bad.
I think that it, the fact that it needs that much clarification shows that it just isn't really well thought out.
Well, so I heard from I don't think she's a listener anymore. Maybe she still is, but I went to high school with her, and she used to live here in Arizona where I just moved. And my grandfather passed away a couple of weeks ago. It was on Facebook, and she saw the people that were commenting on it, and she put together that my uncle had been her stake president when she lived here, and when she left the church, he was the stake president that did some kind of an exit interview with her. So she was telling me this story about my uncle. And when she was taking her daughter, who was getting ready to go into high school, they went to a fireside with all of the youth that are getting ready to go to high school. And my uncle was leading it. And he asked this question: how can you tell when someone is walking in darkness during like the noonday sun? Like, how can you tell those people who are walking in darkness during noonday sun?
So how do you spot bad people?
Yeah. How do you spot those bad people?
Wow.
And she first thought, you know, because like my uncle's, he's a really cool guy, and he's young and friendly and gregarious. And so she thought, oh, he's trapping them. He's laying a trap for them. He's wanting them to talk about physical stereotypes, and then he's going to go away from it and go, no, you can't judge a book by their cover. You know, get to know people for who they are, kind of thing. But anyway, so he asked this question, and two kids respond, and one goes, well, like, if somebody has a bunch of tattoos, and this girl says, oh, if they're, you know, really long black hair that covers their face. And he said, wow. You're exactly right. Those are the people that you want to stay away from.
Oh my gosh.
And so this friend of mine, she's like, that's it, I was done. I was like, I couldn't believe that. But that it, you know, that is exactly what this part three, seeking personal purity, is. I will associate with and date only people who share similar commitment to live the principles of the gospel. And What's weird about the follow-up question is that this is why, and then it's asking for a short answer that you fill in, why I believe that commitment is so important. Like, it's pulling out that one word, that it's a similar commitment to live the principles of the gospel, and then this is why I believe that commitment. But that statement isn't really about commitment. It's about...
No, I think what it is this is why I believe that commitment is so important.
So basically, why do I believe that it's so important to only associate and date people that share, that are living the gospel?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's just poorly written. Okay. Commitment is important because when you commit to somebody, then you're committed to being with them, and you need to honor your commitments.
That was good.
Why do I believe that commitment is so important?
Because I believe
Jesus. Jesus committed. Jesus committed to us. Yeah, I don't know.
This is quite, I mean, that's pretty strident, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you don't want to let any bad influences into your circle of friends.
And it's also, you can hear me, right?
Yeah.
Everything went silent for a second. It's also such a change from your mission, because before your mission, you were supposed to associate with all different walks of life and, you know, bring everybody in and try to build relationships of trust and build on common ground and believe that people can change and they can commit to the gospel and all the rest of it. And then after your mission, sorry, part three, you can't associate with any of those people or date them anymore. Only the people who are already committed to live the principles of the gospel, just like you.
Yeah. I mean, but they're kind of right. Right. I mean, Glenn, you were saying that watching HBO,
yeah,
or whatever, you know, like HBO program, any kind of widening of your perspective,
right,
is a risk factor.
Yeah, absolutely.
True. Yep.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, it's gross. I mean, this is, I don't agree with this idea of like only associate people that are coming from your paradigm. I don't agree with that mentality, but I think if you're trying to maintain as fragile a worldview as Mormonism, it's probably a good idea.
Well, that's a very cynical way of saying it. For those people,
sorry, yeah, you're yeah, right.
For those people who are in it, it's not it's not fragility. It's the eternal stakes, you know, and it's that Satan is so much better at sin. He's been doing it way longer, tempting people to sin, than you've been around making good choices. So if it comes down to just you and Satan, you're gonna lose. That's why you need Jesus on your side. You need the Spirit with you all the time. You need
In that analogy, the other people, non-Mormons, are Satan.
Well, no, but they're susceptible because they don't have the armor of righteousness girding their loins. So you want to be around other people who have the same kinds of standards, that are committed to living a similar life and similar principles of the gospel, so that you're not susceptible to Satan's tempting barbs. You know, and it's really about eternal, you know, these ordinances for salvation that you don't want to invalidate by wickedness.
But isn't that, how is that different than fragility? It's like, it's not that it's fragile. It's just that it's so delicate that if you mess it up, then it'll be shattered forever. You know, like
But I don't think it's about delicacy. It's about what's at stake. If this house of cards crumbles, what are the stakes? How hard is it to build up the house of cards again? And not that it's this really fragile house of cards, because no.
Wait, it's a house of cards.
Right. But I'm talking about the perspective of members. Like, they would never, they would never say, yes, it's a very fragile house of cards that we've stacked up for ourselves. No, they're the wise men that have built their house of cards on a rock, you know?
With super glue,
and it's good, but you know, you don't want people that are coming in that might knock over your house of cards.
Yeah.
not because it's fragile, but because there's all eternity riding on top of it.
I know, but the thing is, the stakes are offset with the idea that like it could fall apart at any second. I mean, if Satan really is that insidious and like really is that just a foot in the door, you know, the camel, you know, nose in the tent or whatever. Sure.
But like, think about, you know, we had this conversation about your mother-in-law and how she knows everything, like all the problems with the church, but
yeah,
it doesn't knock down her house of cards. So would you say for her that it's fragile?
But I don't think that she would agree with this. I don't think that she would read, "I will associate with and only date people who share a similar commitment to living the principles of the gospel." I think she would be like, that's not a, I wouldn't.
Right.
I mean, the associate clause for sure has got to get out of there. But yeah, the date also is, you know, kind of on the fence. So no, I don't think that she would see it as fragile, but I don't think that she would agree with this either. I think that by putting this out there, you're implying that it's a very kind of fragile, delicate balance that you have. It's like a, you know, you're like an infant. Like, don't expose them to any disease. They don't have any antibodies yet.
And now we're getting over to your mom, not Erica's mom, because she does think that you were way too fragile associating with these older men and women on Infants on Thrones that have just totally deceived you.
Right.
You have been deceived. How could I have been so deceived? Yeah.
Well, I think as far as the associate with, we've kind of decided that's almost impossible, right? You got to associate with, you're going to be forced into associating with some people who don't have that similar commitment. But I really think this part three is about dating only people who share that commitment. And when it asks you, this is why I believe that commitment is so important, I think it wants you to say, because you marry the people you date, mm-hmm, and I need to be married in the temple so that I can go to the highest level of the celestial kingdom. So therefore, I can only date people who share the same commitment.
Okay. Yes, I totally agree with that, because part five, not to jump ahead too far, but part five is becoming a disciple of Christ. It says, the commitment I am making to my future spouse is to prepare for our sealing is, quote, marriage between a man and a woman is essential to his eternal plan. Parentheses, family proclamation. So I think that I think what you're saying is I'm agreeing with you. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm jumping ahead by agreeing with you.
Okay. Should we do part four?
Yes. Yes. Sorry. Let's do part four. We'll get to first.
Yep.
I'll do it. You. Yes. Part four, personal power through preparation. Matthew 6:33. Study and learn and become acquainted with all good books, tongues, and people. Heather, tongues.
During the second hour.
During the second hour. I think that's what you were doing. You're just filling the scriptures, fulfilling the scriptures. One tongue at a time.
Gift of tongues, baby.
My career and education goals are outlined below. I don't really have any of these.
Yeah, only read church sanctioned literature.
You know, that's probably why, now that I'm thinking about it, if you look at BYU and like the fields in which they're particularly, I mean, they're very highly ranked in preparing undergraduates for particular types of fields. And a lot, and most of them are stuff like accounting. I have a half-formed hypothesis. I don't really know where it's going. And I'm hoping that somebody will jump in here or something. But in education, you have a kind of a disproportionate number of Mormon accountants than you do Mormon people that are in the humanities or something like that.
Right. So the sort of technical stuff versus the, intellectual stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm agreeing with myself here. I don't know. Does this feel like it has any legs, or is this totally out of my ass? I think this is totally out of my ass.
Well, I do think that, all right, so the BYU, what are they called? Majors? Areas of concentration? What do you call them?
Majors?
Majors. Yeah, I guess majors. All right, so the major at BYU that apparently has the highest attrition rate from the church is the anthropology department. Yeah. Because the more you become associated with the history of man and culture, the less plausible it becomes to you that this is God's one and only true church.
Mm. Well, that so, which is exactly what happened with me, with you know folklore being part of that cultural anthropology track. And I was told when I started working in the folklore archives that a lot of folklorists go inactive. You know, a lot of people who study this kind of stuff, they end up going on inactive. And really? That was like... Mm. A gauntlet to, you know, like, oh yeah, well, I'm not going to be one of them.
Right. Right. Your testimony is unshakable.
Unshakable. Yeah.
But there is something to what you're saying, Jake, in that those kind of, classes and courses where there are right and wrong answers and you come to a sum or, you know, the answer and there's no black and white about it, it's multiple choice. That doesn't test your faith the way something that you have to write an essay, about a worldview that's different than yours, you know?
Yeah, it's almost as if education is a kind of code word for increase your employment opportunities or like make sure that you can, you know, my educational goals, it's always tied to like the practical application. It's not about like education for its own sake and just learn everything. I mean, I know we have scriptures that say, you know, out of the best books and et cetera, but I think there's much more mm-hmm. of an emphasis on education as in so much as it is practically applicable toward providing for your family, right? Or contributing yeah. to becoming a contributing member of society and paying tithing. But I don't think that's a more cynical interpretation of it. But I don't think that like the liberal arts in general or something that's really emphasized is like a broad kind of liberal education of humanities and anthropology.
Oh,
and
there we go. Things. Humanities, liberal education. Yeah, those are the things. But yeah, Joseph Smith was interested in all of those things too, though.
But I don't think that it's really conducive to fitting in. I mean,
I don't know. There's a lot of poems that get read in general conference that give the impression of, you know, worldly concession or worldly agreement on gospel principles. You know, mm-hmm. if it shows up in like a Samuel Coleridge poem or something like that, and
right.
President Monson quotes a you know, then you got the impression of education, even if it's not, even if it's misused.
But didn't, your favorite, Boyd K. Packer, didn't he write his own poems, this kind of like doggerel cowboy poetry?
I think so.
About getting older, shuffling around. You have to look up that clip, Jake.
I think that's the one that I used when he says, of all the blessings that have come, the best thing in my life is the companionship and comfort I get from my good wife. And I clipped off
wife
with replaced it with
very young man.
Of all the blessings that have come, the best thing in my life is the companionship and comfort I get from very young man.
Yeah, that was his poem.
So okay, quick question here, because I've been looking up some of these scriptures that they keep quoting at the end of the titles, just to see if they actually say anything about it. And some of them are pretty close, and some of them are just like, C.S. Lewis, 7:13, you know, doesn't mean anything. But this one at DNC 90 that it quotes, it actually gets wrong. It says, you know, become acquainted with all good books, languages, tongues, and people. So I kind of wonder, what did Joseph Smith think languages and tongues meant? How did he think those were different? Maybe he did mean making out, because he already covered it with languages.
But it does it say in DNC 90:15, it says languages, tongues?
It does, with all good books and with languages, comma, tongues, comma, and people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe tongues was something like speaking in tongues. Yeah. Maybe that was something where it was like languages of men and languages of the spirit.
Yeah.
Very nice, Professor Frost.
Oh. Yeah. a sweater vest just materialized on my body.
Nice.
Yes.
All right. Well, I don't really have, I had like a half-baked idea, but I feel like it was legitimized through you two in some way. Excellent. So thank you.
All right, Glennis.
Which one am I? Because we've been jumping around now.
Sorry, I kind of jumped ahead to part five.
Are we part six? Yeah, becoming a disciple of Christ, boring. And like, becoming a disciple of Christ, part five, is all about marriage, marrying the right person. Like, right. Really? Yeah,
total non sequitur.
That's your example of becoming a disciple of Christ? The ones who were asked to reject their family members and spouse, you know.
It's also very clear that it's like heterosexual marriage.
Oh,
right.
It's like becoming a disciple of Christ is heterosexual marriage. That's how you emulate Christ. Yeah. Cause he was so into marriage.
We need a hashtag Doug on that one. So yeah, the commitment I am making to my future spouse to prepare for our sealing is marriage between man and woman is essential to his eternal plan. And like, what are you supposed to write for that? It's just, it's stupid. Yeah, I totally want this. Yeah, being a disciple of Christ and married is awesome. I'm like, what are you writing this? I don't know.
Maybe but what if you're a gay elder or a sister coming back from your mission? And you're like, yeah, I got to be a disciple of Christ. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get married.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not attracted to the opposite sex. Hmm. I mean, I think that's what it is.
Really?
Well, you think it's specifically for the gay ones so that they go ahead and take that cold shower for the rest of their life?
I think that's probably the subtext here.
Becoming a disciple of Christ. It is weird that it's not about like continuing to serve and it's P&V. Make sure you make that happen.
That's right. P&V. You want us to do the next one?
All right, let's go and skip it to the next one. I will do it. Part six. Seeking virtue affirms a commitment. Some of them are like becoming a disciple of Christ. Like they're personal power. There's no like parallelism in the way that they're radically either.
The most abstract one I've ever heard. To all the abstractions.
Seeking personal purity. Okay. That's the personal powers for preparation. Not really. There's no verb there, but whatever. Becoming a disciple of Christ, fine, but it's kind of a sequitur because of the heterosexual marriage. Then part six, seeking virtue affirms a commitment to holiness. What is that?
It's a tautology.
Right. Okay. And then the next one is the prompt is the attributes I desire most in my future spouse are
hot bod.
What would you have written, Glenn?
Oh my gosh, what would I have written back then? I have no idea.
Yes,
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I didn't.
You guys
know.
Didn't write.
No,
you didn't write out a long list of things that you wanted in your future spouse.
That's what they did with you, ladies. They didn't do that with us,
right? Because we had identities outside of our ability to find a mate. That's the advantage of being male.
Yes, probably like CTR 8. They sit you down as a girl and say attributes you most desire in a future spouse are priesthood holder. Loves kids. I don't know what else. That's all that really matters, right?
Which, I mean, did you write these? What did you write?
Oh, I had a long list, and I actually read it to your brother-in-law while I was in college. And he was, I didn't realize this at the time, but I think that he had some kind of a crush on me at that point, because he got really frustrated and annoyed that it was so long and detailed. Like,
and there's probably something that's like tall. He's like, why is this tall? He's not.
It probably was. Yeah, but I was very specific. Like, I wanted somebody who followed politics and who, I don't know, this and that, all sorts of things. Hilarious. I was a 6 who thought she was a 7 looking for a 10.
Aren't we all?
Right.
All right. So we have our laundry list of future spouse with part 6. Who's got part 7?
Part 7. Loving God by honoring and respecting those whom he has provided to me to love.
What?
Interesting.
No. Whom he has provided to love me.
Oh, to love me. Okay. Okay. Wait a second. Loving God by honoring and respecting those whom he has provided to love me. Oh, that's quite sweet. My parents and siblings can expect the following from me from this point forward in my life. Ugh, that's a tough one. This one always sticks in my craw with my with my personal parentage.
Uh-huh.
That's a tough one. Yeah, these are the things that kept me up late nights for so much of my life. Am I honoring and respecting my parents? Because it's really hard to respect someone who doesn't earn it.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I would have put here.
It's a weird place. Like, why
it is weird.
Why isn't this earlier? This seems like this should be an earlier thing. You get this out of the way and then you go to the marriage stuff, but yeah, I don't know. It just seems weird.
Because after you get married, you don't have to worry about your siblings or your parents anymore, right?
Well, it's kind of
disappear.
If you're trying to set goals and a structure for the rest of your life, it really is more about the identity that you have in, you know, as a married couple and a parent, you know, in the church. Then I don't know. It just seems strange to me. But I also lived away from family for 20 years, so.
20 years, geez.
Yeah.
It is kind of an odd place. And it's also kind of odd that it would hone in that much on like the parents and siblings aspect of it. Because at that point, you're like, I think there's an expectation once you come home for your missions. Most missionaries kind of move out from their family. Like they're not, I mean, they still interact with their parents and siblings and things, but it's not like they're really living at home for an extended mm-hmm. period of time. I think in most cases, at least in the United States.
Almost like they're an adult.
It's almost. It's close.
Yeah, it's weird to be coming home from your mission and then having this focus on your family of origin, because it seems like the focus is instead on forming your new nuclear family.
Right, right. And then they shoehorn this in there. And then, yeah. So it is kind of an odd place in there. I wonder if like that was like a later addition into the thing where somebody's like, you really need to have something about the parents, because that's, I mean, is that what parents expect? Do they send their kids out like kind of expecting them like, this will straighten them out, when they come back then they'll appreciate me
or keep writing to me every Wednesday or something like that?
Right. I mean, is that what the expectation is from the parent side? I mean,
I don't know. I still can't get past this. honoring and respecting those whom he has provided to love me. What if they don't love you? This is just like a stab in the heart to those who don't have parents and siblings, or don't have parents and siblings who take good care of them or love them or are worthy of their honor and respect. Me no likey.
I guess I didn't really think about that, but I guess it's not the point is not to think about exceptions. Think about the rules.
You're right.
If you fit outside of this, then you figure your own shit out.
Okay.
Sorry, that sounded really callous, especially to somebody that's like, if your parents don't love you, you can figure it out. This is only for people with loving parents.
You're the exception.
Right.
Deal with it.
Never. All right. So part 8. Heather, I think this is... Did you do the last one? Is it me now?
I read the last one. It's somebody.
All right, I'll do it. Part 8. Elevating my life by developing positive life habits. To continue to grow spiritually in my life, I will do the following on a regular basis. How is this different than...
Than the first one?
The following are things I will do to keep the influence of the Spirit in my life. That's the very first thing. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Well, it's trying, having introduced all of these spiritual things, it's trying to transition over to secular.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, maybe.
It says grow spiritually.
Yeah, that's why I said trying. Transition.
Well, see, when you look at some of these other ones, so you have the, you know, I will do the following on a regular basis, and there are a few lines where you can write things in, but then there's another prompt that says, quote unquote, regular temple attendance means : So Heather, Haley's, like you were pointing out before, Haley's comment.
Yeah, and my financial goals include tithes and offerings, and it doesn't leave that blank. It says yes, it's going to include those. And then blank, what else? What are your other financial goals? Savings goals, debt avoidance. So that's where it's like getting into the secular realms, but it's framing it in the gospel and, you know, starting from temple attendance and tithes and offerings and getting more secular from there. But I don't know.
But it doesn't seem like this should go right out, go kind of be combined with the first prompt.
Yeah, the first half of it should. And then let's talk about your financial goals. And then let's also put in your like health goals. And then you could have the word of wisdom and working out. Like you're supposed to exercise as a missionary. Have you keep exercising for your life, you know?
Well, there's no consequence to breaching any of these terms in the contract. You know, it's a pretty pointless thing. there's no teeth to it. Or, you know, it's like, we're almost done. We've got a couple more, but let's just get to the end of it. Part 9, learning to respect and seek the divine promises the Lord extends to all who earnestly seek him. I have read each of the following scriptural promises that the Lord makes to those who honors commitments. And then there's, 12 different scriptures that are posted there that you've got to make sure you go and read. And then part 5 is...
And only 2 of them are from the Bible.
Yeah. No, there's Proverbs, Luke, John.
Oh, there's Luke. You're right.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
25% from the Bible.
Yeah. Which is the only real scripture, let's be honest. Bible's the real thing.
And then part 5, it just says, my commitment and the support of those who love me. And there's nothing there except a place for 4 signatures. The return, and this is returning missionaries. So this is something that they fill out before they leave their mission, because it calls them returning missionary, not a returned missionary. And then the parents, and they were politically correct there. They did parent or parentheses. So for those kids that only have one parent, that was very considerate.
Aww.
Bishop and stake president, and then with a date. So that they can date and sign it.
Like it's notarized.
Right. And then it says, note to returning missionaries. When this document has been completed, please make 1, and then it gives a parenthetical 1, so you don't mistake that. Oh, how many copies? One copy for each of the following. Parents, bishop, and stake president. What the hell are they going to do with copies of these things? Like, what? They're going to... Coming, you got your quarterly review. How are you doing on your goals? Are you meeting all your goals?
That's just
you said in here that you were gonna, you know, do this every day. Have you been doing it every day?
It's like making a commitment on Facebook. I will post every time I break my contract. It's the public shaming that keeps you on your commitments. Have other people know, even if they don't ever read it or don't care. It's like you call up somebody and say, I'm going to speak French by next year.
Yeah.
But so the whole, yes, it has no teeth in it. Like nobody's going to check up on you. The promise of this is this, that you're going to stay active, essentially, right? That this is the way to stay on, to stay in the church and to protect your testimony. And it's your personal performance contract. And so I'm looking at these and thinking, did I do all of these? You know, I really did, except for the thing with the parents, which I don't know what that means, but I feel like I did all of these things.
Well, let's, I mean,
and you didn't leave the church within the first year.
So right. What are the things about the Mormon experience, about the post-mission Mormon experience that are emphasized here? Because the things that are emphasized here are implicitly the things that are going to keep you in the church, right? These are the things that are essential to your eternal salvation or giving you a high likelihood of that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, you know, temple attendance, busy work, and getting married. Right? I mean, is that what it is? Is that what it's all about? Is the post-mission Mormon life just going to the temple, reading your scriptures, praying, and getting married?
Yeah, I guess so. And just staying associating with only the people who are similar to you. Yeah, right. if you want to stay in the in-group, if you want to continue to believe something, be sure you associate only with people who believe the same thing as you.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's important to recognize that this is not something that officially comes from the church.
Right.
You know, this is not a church-wide program. I'm convinced even more than I was before that this is some AP's plan while he's on his mission of like, how are we going to help people that are going home? Because this was his way of dealing with his own trunkiness.
Mm.
Right. And so,
but this was instituted at a stake level somewhere.
What does that mean, instituted?
Instituted meaning like it was like a stake policy that when missionaries came home, they were given this document, and they were told to fill it out and make copies and sign it and distribute it. I guess what I was getting at is, okay, so it's not coming down from the church, you know, as the central organization, but it was created kind of organically by a local congregation, which, you know, gives it legitimacy in some other ways. It's like, this is how people, I mean, they obviously saw their own problem, took initiative to solve it. And the way they solved this problem was get them, make sure they continued to do the busy work, continue to read scriptures, pray, and then get them in the temple. Get them in the temple like regular attendance, whatever they mm-hmm. define that as, but get them married heterosexually.
And as much as – so we're kind of smacking this down and looking at – to poke holes in it and things. But I think this kind of thing is great, goal making and being – and trying to be specific about different areas of your life. And I think that's wonderful, and we should all have those kind of – inventories of our goals and be serious about them so that we have direction in our life and something tangible in a place where you write things down. There's power in that. Tell other people, these are the things that I want to do. Hold me accountable for it. I think those are all great things. And it at least gives Glenn, who was so disappointed after his mission, not to have the structure and the goals and the institution, a little program to follow.
Right.
Because Glenn grew up in a church where he did his little faith in God thing, where he checked those boxes, and then he did his scouting thing, and he did his, like women did the personal progress, where it's the same thing. I'll do three of these, two of these five things, and I'll write about it in my journal every day for 2 weeks and whatever. So you do all of that, and then you have all these guidelines and all the institution around a mission that keeps you goal-oriented and tells you exactly what you should be doing all the time. And then you come home and it can be a real letdown. So I think this does, you know, fill a void for a lot of people. There are probably a lot of return missionaries and APs and whatever who grabbed this and said yes and wrote down every single answer and posted it up on their wall and made the graph of I'm going to do this for every single day and checked all the boxes.
Well, I agree that that need certainly does exist. And, it's, you know, certainly is fulfilling a need that a lot of people feel after their mission. I guess my question is, why does that, is that a need that should exist? You know, like,
what do you mean?
Does it create, does it?
You're inviting judgment by using the word should.
Should. Don't should the boy to death, Marge.
So what the this need you that is fulfilling
I'm
is
you shouldn't do that.
I should. Hey, wait, hold
hey,
on.
Whoa, hey, just,
hey, whoa, hypocrite. I mean, it's definitely filling a need, but it's filling a need that the church kind of created in the first place, right? By creating such an oppressive structure where people had to, you have to go into the mission, you act, and you have your behavior controlled in so many ways for so long, and it's just pounded into your head that this is what you're supposed to be doing, this is what you're supposed to be doing, that of course when they just catch you, you know, they release you back into the wild, mm-hmm. So you'll figure it out now that you've been incubated in this really controlling environment for so long, like, of course people are going to feel lost.
Yes, it does create the need for it. But the answer that the church is going to say is, oh, okay, well, let's keep on creating the need for that. Let's actually make this into a real legitimate thing where we give people this, let's have a program for faith in God that's for ages 25 to 30 and personal progress ages 30 to 40 or whatever. That would be great.
Yeah, I could go for a personal progress manual right now.
This thing does kind of make me sit down and say, all right, what kind of person do I want to be? I'm going to go ahead and inventory my life and all these different areas and come up with specific goals. So maybe I'm still in that mindset. Maybe that's just my personality. Nobody else was excited by this kind of thing.
Yeah, I was listening to an audiobook within the last couple months. It's Martin Short, and he narrates it himself. It's a good listen. There was this one chapter early on that I was super impressed because it's not just, you know, the funny stories that he's talking about his career, but things that he does to take an inventory of his own life. And, you know, like he even mentioned in the book that people have told him he needs to develop this into like a self-help program. And he just always rejects that because it works for him. That doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody. I don't remember if it was 8 or 9 points, but he's got it down to a system very much like this, where he sets the goals for himself, very much balanced on family and his personal health. And, you know, I don't know that he called spirituality, but there was, you know, a place for that there. But just always, I think he looks at it on a daily basis. Am I doing things that are going to get me where I want to be in my life? I was super impressed with that. I would never be able to do anything like that for myself. I'm just not that organized or driven. Anytime I try to put myself on programs like that, it just doesn't last very long. But I was impressed that he did.
You have too much of a fixed mindset, Glenn.
Yeah.
After you finish You Look Marvelous by Martin Short, you got to read Carol Dweck's Mindset, because you said, I just couldn't do that because I'm just this way. That's your only problem. As soon as you believe that you can progress and change, then you'll realize that this is for everyone.
If I act enthusiastic, then I'll be enthusiastic.
The secret.
If I act enthusiastic, then I'll be enthusiastic.
Actually, you might.
Hey, I'm enthusiastic.
But it's more about like talent is overrated and skill is overrated. That's actually bugging me with the Olympics, where they keep calling these people talented. Talent, yes, they probably have some genetic predisposition to stuff, but I wish they would just say like skilled, or they would refer to people's skill and their hard work more instead of just saying, oh, they're so talented. They're such an amazing talent. Because, yeah, that's a talent that they've been putting in tens of thousands of hours of work into to make it look like they were just blessed with it. The end.
I think Bill Murray had a comment. They should put regular people side by side
Right,
for reference. That was pretty awesome.
Phelps and Lochte are neck and neck, and Jeff is three laps behind.
Yeah.
All right,
still,
so how many of us...
getting the nacho cheese off of his fingers.
Jeff is clinging to the side of the pool at this point, and we're going to have to fish him out.
As a cramp, I just went back to the other end. So my kids all like injure themselves during watching the Olympics because they all like get up on the couch and try to do balance beam routines right. without having done 10,000 hours of practice. But this is really embarrassing. This year, I injured myself trying to stretch like the swimmers. Like, oh, wow. I can do those helicopter arm things. Why not?
Then you knocked over the lamp. Out.
Let me do this really fast. Oh my gosh, what just happened? I can slap around this, my back like Michael Phelps.
I want to create a drinking game for like listening to Keith Olbermann call the women's gymnastics event. Because everything is like so dramatic.
I know.
You notice like Keith Olbermann is just, he's such a drama queen. It's really
and
funny.
And he always talks like he's just can't be heard over the crowd. She's got to feel so much pressure right now. The pressure is just mind-boggling.
And then something poignant. And it's all in the tone and delivery. Yeah. It's over, man.
Gymnastics 101, fly high and stick the landing.
Yeah. It's good. I enjoy watching it. It's been fun to watch. I'm missing it now.
I love Olympics.
But, yeah.
TiVo.
Yeah, we don't have cable, so I'm just watching it through rabbit ears. Just picking it up on the antenna and not watching it on streaming it or anything. But
are you guys watching The Night Of on HBO in Game of Thrones slot?
No, is it good? Is it worth it?
I've been watching it, yes.
I love it. I love it.
It's like a horror story of the American justice system. It's crazy.
Yeah. I've watched so many procedurals, but this, I've never felt more like vulnerable as I'm being processed through the criminal justice system. Ugh.
Wow.
Yeah, it's good stuff. You should try it.
This is the sort of thing that newly returning missionaries would be steered away from.
Yes.
Yes.
And safe and protected and, you know, not, you know, falling away like we did.
Well, we're going to hell.
So you need to end this episode, Jake, with taps.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew, Ryan,
Carol,
Keith,
Ashley, and I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear, give The Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.